from Moby Dick. The wife, she thinks I'm working, and the boss, he thinks I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer, and telling lies. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys.
I couldn't describe it better myself if I tried. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer, telling lies. I mean, it just sounds right for today.
It's a beautiful day out there.
Beautiful day. We got cold front coming. It's going to drop at 5-10 degrees. It's even going to get nicer. I can't think of a better time to be in South Florida.
No, I can't figure out whether I want to be happy about this cold front or not.
All right, explain that. I don't get it.
It's really nice when it's only 70 degrees out there at noon.
Right.
It's not nice when it's 50 degrees out there in the morning.
No, but I don't think it's going to get that cold. I think it's going to be in high 60s, 70 in the morning, and then 80s in the day.
Yeah, so, a little bit of a break from the the gates of hell that we've been fishing in lately.
Well, the only thing I can tell you is, no matter what you think about it now, I've been watching the weather, and it was hotter in Montana than it was here. Montana had higher temperatures than us just a week or two ago.
Yeah, and their fish are nowhere near as big, so that hurts even twice as bad.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, so everything's been going on. You've been taking charters out, things happening.
Yeah, we're kind of out of our late summer slump, starting to get busy again.
So, you know, everybody's saying the fishing's slow, and I don't know if it's really slow or just changed so much with this last rain that it's harder for people to find them.
Well, everything's changing. The redfish, the big redfish are starting to come in. The snook are making their way back. The tarpon are going to be leaving. The trout are coming in. That big transition always throws people, because most of the people that say the fishing's slow are those guys that go fish the same area every time.
Yeah, and if you're not moving around, if you're not changing, you're falling behind. You're just going to basically, you know, you need to, is that better?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, I didn't know you're this one, I'm believing.
No, I'm good.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, you know, I adjust the knobs and everything here. So if the show sounds like garbage, that's because I'm not very good at my job. That's the whole thing. But anyway, we're going to be putting the links up to fishingfranks.com, which is our boutique store. And
yep.
It's got a lot of cool stuff on it. No fishing tackle yet. That's all coming here as we're going to be working with the different factories, trying to get things going so that we can get the fishing tackle up and have enough in stock. And little by little, we're going to put fishing tackle on. Right now, there's keychains, Christmas ornaments, all Fish and Frank stuff.
Our shirts.
The shirts, that kind of thing. All Fish and Frank's exclusive stuff. And the shirts are, when you see the hook and the hammerhead, keep in mind, Robert drew those. They were only available at Fish and Frank's because they are original Robert. And so the guy who does our fishing report, weekly fishing report with me. But anyway, back to this. The fishing is transitional, but a lot of reports in front of Turtle Bay. People are going to hate me because I'm talking about it, but you're talking 20, 30-pound redfish in front of Turtle Bay right now.
And you got to be willing to move for those, too, because those fish are moving around. One day they're in front of Turtle Bay, the next day they're in front of Bold Bay.
Jug Creek Shoals.
And then they're all the way up. 2 days ago, they were all the way up by Bird Turd Key.
But yeah, I was going to say, you can get it, Kale. Keep going.
I had to think about it.
You'll get it. Yeah, I know. Trying to figure out a polite way of saying Cormorant Key. Nobody really knows Cormorant Key because it's had so many different names over the years.
Right, right.
But anyway, it's right in the middle of the east side. It's the only partial.
No. No, Bird Crab Key, all the way up by Placida.
Oh, okay. You're talking about
the
tail
and flats.
There's a few.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, there is a few.
Dog Island.
Right.
Dog Island, I guess.
And that just goes to show you how far and how much ground you have to be willing to cover this time of year. I'm starting in Harbor Heights. I'm running down to Devilfish to get bait. I start fishing in Placida up in Catfish Creek. Come back, hit Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, over to Burnt Store, all the way up the east side into Poacher's Cut, Colony Point, So you got to get, you got to be willing to cover 50, a lot of ground.
50, 60 mile run to, to make it.
Yeah.
But people don't get the idea. Let's break it down by the math. All right. A fish moves at 2 miles an hour.
Right.
Swimming lazily. He's along a mile and a half, 2 miles an hour.
Yep.
And so in an hour, he went mile and a half, 2 miles.
Mile and a half, 2 miles
half
away.
Half an hour, he's three-quarters of a mile.
He's now out of casting distance.
Yes. It only takes a matter of minutes for them to move that far.
Right.
And it's all about food. I mean, if you drive by a restaurant and it's closed, you drive to the next one.
Exactly. And you don't sit there and wait for them to open.
No. No, I'm probably not going to sit in front of the restaurant waiting for it to open. I'm going to go to the next one. And same thing with the fish. They're going to feed through an area, then they're going to move on, and that area calms down, it gets more bait in it, you know, and then they come back to it. And they'll follow sort of patterns. I mean, they tend to make circles and up and down, follow those same shorelines feeding as they go.
Yep, and it's usually as the bait follows the tide.
Right. Yeah, I'd have to say that. Now, you're using white bait predominantly. How are the shrimp, pinfish, anything else working at all?
Shrimp and pinfish are working well. I'm getting all three to go on a day's trip because the ones out by the intercoastal waterway will predominantly, you know, want the white bait.
Right.
And then as you get up closer towards the middle of the harbor, they're starting to look at pinfish. And then once you're up in the upper harbor, they're starting to look at shrimp a little better. So I want to have all three with me.
Hey,
and then I've got that off school in Catfish Creek that won't touch anything but big shrimp.
You know,
they don't want pinfish. They don't want crabs. They don't want little shrimp. They don't want white bait. They've got to have handpick or better shrimp, or they just will not eat.
Well, you know, it's adapt and overcome. I was sitting on an island one day with a charter. I got four guys in the boat. We're freelining white bait. We're catching fish after fish. And a little cloud went over. We had a five-second burst of rain. And I had to take every rod rig up different. Finally, it was shrimp under popping corks.
Yep.
And but if you change with the fish, you keep fishing, you keep catching.
Right.
You know, what is it they say, the definition of insanity, doing the exact same thing over and over expecting different results. Yeah, you got to adapt and overcome. So anyway, how's the charter thing going right now?
Much better. Like I said, we've come out of that summertime slump. We're starting to see Canadians starting to show up already. They're allowed to stay down longer now, so they're showing up a little earlier and they're leaving a whole lot later. A lot of these guys, they've got to be back before. They used to have to be back one day before 6 months, or else they'd lose their health care. And now it's 9 months, I believe. Yeah. So a lot of them are staying later to catch the tarpon season that they've been missing all along.
Yeah, I don't think they're showing up much earlier because, let's face it, there's a couple of months out of the year you really want to be up north. And when the leaves are turning and all that kind of stuff, it's cool to be up there.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's nice, and you get that crisp fall mornings. We get those here, but they're sporadic. It's not like you can wake up every day for a month or a week, and you got that beautiful fall where you've got, you know, jacket in the morning, you bundle up, sipping coffee, and then it gets warmer as the day progresses, you know. So down here, Sunday's going to be that way. It's going to be chilly. I'm going to be on the back porch. I'm going to have my coffee, my nicotine habit.
Nice and comfy.
Yeah, wrapped up in something, you know, that's going to be cool. I'm kind of waiting for it. Although, now that I'm getting healthier, a month ago, I'd go outside, I was dying. I mean, but then again, if you saw me, I looked like I was dying, you know. You could pinch your fingers together through my thigh muscles. But now, all of a sudden, I'm feeling good and healthy, and I'm like, you know, the heat isn't bothering me as much. I walked outside and got in the sun and went, oh my God, this feels great. It's kind of like it used to be.
It takes its toll on it. Yesterday was rough for me. It was hot out there yesterday.
Really?
And I had four people on the boat. We were catching fish. So I didn't have time just to keep up on my water.
Well, what we're going to do is I think we're going to be getting both boats. And so when it's real hot, once I get the other one, one of our captains went out and was going up the west wall, hit something, and broke the midsection off the motor. I've never seen that before. No. My whole life, I've been boating around boats and fishing since I was very, very young, and I'm rather old at the point. and I've never seen the midsection snap off. The bullet, the cavitation plate, had a little dent in the bottom of the skeg. Usually the skeg will break off. But
yeah, it'll break off, fold over, or it takes the entire lower unit off.
But this was between the cavitation plate and the motor where the exhaust housing and everything was.
Yep.
Literally snapped right across the middle in half. The top and bottom separated. That was the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
Never seen it either.
And I've been running in this harbor. The only time I've hit anything was in the Mayaca Cutoff. I hit the airplane. They used to bring a lot of drugs in, marijuana and stuff, to the Charlotte Harbor. And they would bring it in small float planes or little planes. And they'd land on the streets in Northport, which didn't have anything on them back then. And, you know, all those planes. And well, one went into the Mayaca and thought he was going to land and found dirt instead of water.
Instead of water. Didn't work well, did it?
He came in and it just nosed it right into the dirt, and the plane was just left there and eventually sunk. But it's only about 4 to 6 inches under the mud.
Yeah.
And I was going back through in a hurry, not paying attention, tried to cut that corner and smacked that airplane big time, my prop. But that was the only thing I've ever hit down here. And to see here something on the west side, it's the first time. I don't know if it's somebody's outboard that fell off.
Nah, I think if anything, it's probably some bedrock that's been exposed.
A little chunk of sandstone or limestone.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of outgoing current with the amount of rain that we've been getting. It doesn't take long.
Well, and we don't have a jack plate on that boat either.
No.
So without the jack plate, he was probably slicing sand going up.
Probably.
So yeah, I guess that would explain it. But anyway, right now, what could a customer expect? They hire you for a trip. What's the expectation out there right now?
I think the big ones right now are snook and redfish. Yeah, those are your big two right now. Big redfish. Not your little slot size snook. Your big ones have come in from offshore. You're looking for your oversized reds.
So you're talking 34, 39-inch redfish.
Right. And snook are doing well. They're doing well pretty much everywhere. From upriver down to the intercoastal, they're doing well. The trout are starting to come in. Lots of trout around the tailing flats at Placida. I haven't been over there, but if they're in the tailing flats at Placida, then they're going to be over on the other side around Yuseppa, Patricio, those flats over there also.
Right.
Snapper are doing insanely well.
Everybody, I mean, all Robert's talking about is how amazed he is at the snapper fishing right now.
They're everywhere.
And there's some nice 14, 16, 18-inch snappers out there.
I mean, I can go down in front of Devilfish, chum up my bait, sit right there, and probably catch a limited snapper right where I got my bait.
Yeah, well, that's what's drawing
them
in.
There's that many out there.
It's the same thing as over at Jug Creek Shoals. There's so much bait there that the fish are moving in, and they're coming to the boats because the boats are throwing chum. They're, you know, culling their live wells, getting whatever they don't want out of live wells, throwing it over. And it's just creating this massive fishery.
Yeah.
And it's same thing's happening at Devilfish, Jug Creek. The guys doing bait are actually bringing the snappers and all the other fish right up by the boat. So a little word of advice for right now, if you're at Jug Creek, Devilfish, you get your bait, stay
there and fish.
Yeah, just stop and then start throwing some baits out and see what happens, because you're probably leaving more fish than what you're going to.
Yeah, I laugh every day that I get down there. The guys, they do the same thing. They come in, they throw the net, they load up, and they leave, and I sit right there and fish.
So, yeah, and it's working. Now, are you playing at all with the tarpon? There's so many tarpon upriver, and I know you love fishing a river.
No, I haven't played with a tarpon. They're being very, very finicky. We're having another flush of, help me here, tilapia coming down.
Yep.
Okay. The good news is that, yes, it is drawing a lot of tarpon. The bad news is they're full.
Okay.
They're gorging themselves on these things. They don't want to eat. They don't need to eat.
I just went on fishandfranks.com, weather and tides, going down the bottom, click the Peace River button, and the bottom of that page is the gauge height in feet and Arcadia, and it's right now 12 foot and leveled off at 12. So,
and what's normal?
If
three
If we have 2 feet of water in Arcadia, there's a light freshwater flow, you know, a couple of inches. Once it hits a foot and a half in Arcadia, we have no freshwater coming at us. So you figure we have a 10-foot wall of water coming at us right now.
Okay.
So it's 10 feet of water coming down into the harbor. Yeah, it's, oh man, it's, I forget how many, I think cubic feet a second is something like 2400. I have no idea where my phone is. That's the ringer.
Right on the back side of your monitor.
Can you hand it to me there? At least I can turn the ringer off. Anyway, a lot of stuff going on upriver, but like Kale says, it's hard to do. I forgot to shut the ringer off on my phone. But it's hard to actually find out what's going on up there because there's so much freshwater, so much tilapia coming down, so much stuff, it's hard to get in on. But if you can get those tilapia, it is illegal, but I would probably go to court with you over that. That's the dumbest law I've ever seen. We're sticking a hook into them. They want them dead anyway.
It's going to be dead when the tarpon eats it. You're going to take it off the hook when it's dead if the tarpon doesn't eat it. You're not leaving the same body of water in which you've caught it, and FWC still has a web page that recommends using them for snook.
Yes.
Live, by the way.
Yes. So this is another one of FWC's. If you're listening in Tallahassee, hopefully you tune back in Tallahassee. And we know you have some great people up there, but where the heck are they? You know? I mean, come on down. We'll explain some laws and some rules for you to help you manage this.
It's one of those, you know, I'll follow the law until it's just plain stupid.
Yeah, well, you know, there's, I don't know what to say. I'm at a loss. I'm at a loss.
But if the rains keep up and the cold fronts stay away, it's going to be a phenomenal winter for snook and redfish.
Cool fronts coming.
Yeah, if we can keep them coming.
And not cold fronts.
Right. We need to keep bait here.
Now, I've heard it's El Nino this year, and if it's an El Nino year, we're going to have a little more wind. Storm once a week, but for the most part, it's going to be a mild, great winter. And if you got, you know where to go and hide.
That's exactly why I'm hoping that we won't get cold, because it is going to be a windy winter.
It's going
to
be,
that's all there is to it.
Cool and windy. It's not going to be horrific down here. Up north, they're probably going to get blasted. But
you know, and it's going to be a good winter to fish the river.
It's going to be a good winter for fishing all the way around the harbor. Once this 12 feet of water that's coming down the river right now, exactly what we need to clean the harbor out. It creates a huge amount of bacteria right now and a huge amount of all this problem stuff, but it also flushes everything else out. And any of the saltwater bacterias die.
Right.
And then once the freshwater's gone, the saltwater comes in, any of the freshwater bacteria die. So this is the way of the harbor cleaning itself out. We really needed this big rainy year with a lot of water coming down the river.
And if you don't realize just how much or how far into the harbor that fresh water will reach, we had gar rolling at Cape Hayes yesterday.
Well, that's because it's the west side. Now,
right.
If you see them over by Bernstorff, you know
there's a lot of water coming down.
But the west side, no, that's actually what they should be at this time of year. Because the gar stay in the first foot of water.
Right.
And salt's heavier than water. So the salt is going to be on the bottom. Freshwater's going to be on the top. Saltwater's going to be on the bottom. Any salt that's left will be real close to the bottom levels. And those gar, they come in and out with that freshwater because they literally very seldom go down less than a foot of water unless they're scared and they drop down.
Right.
But for the most part, they're hanging out right near the surface.
And you actually got to see that yesterday. When we came through, still a little bit of incoming tide. So you still had salt up top. And there were ladyfish, jacks, Spanish mackerel by the thousands up above Cape Hayes. And by the time we went and got bait and hit my first hole up inside Catfish Creek and come back around Cape Hayes, it was already outgoing tide. And you didn't see anything on the surface. And my client said, well, we missed it. It's over with. Watch a minute. And I grabbed a handful of white bait and threw it out there. Sure enough, up they come from down below, feeding on everything.
They're just down deep.
Yeah, they just drop down deeper into the salt water.
Yeah, it's the same thing as the white bait. I've been hearing reports of bait around marker 2. And marker 2 is holding a little bit of bait, but you can't see it. You can't chum it because it doesn't want to come up.
Right. And it usually doesn't this time of year at marker 2. You're usually throwing blind.
And you got to let it sink, but don't throw on the side that faces the 41 bridge.
No.
You will not get your net back.
No, there is a bottom goblin down there that eats nets.
Well, the Coast Guard threw batteries down there for years. Everybody thinks the Coast Guard, this, you know, I guess the protector of our water, well, they're just lazy, so they take the battery that runs the light, the marker light,
yeah,
and drop it.
Yep.
Instead of hauling them back off. And they got in big trouble over that, but that's still years worth of batteries sitting down there, as a couple of local guides didn't like people casting for bait in their spot, so they threw shopping cart down there. Yeah. They got other stuff.
And you can see that lump in that pile. If you go through it with your fish finder on, you can see that lump.
And the west side of the marker's clear. The north and south are okay. But take a 45-degree angle on that east or northeast side.
If you've got an incoming tide, just go find bait someplace else. Because that's where that stuff is going to be on an incoming tide, right over that lump.
Yeah, it's tough. So, anyway, getting up around, if you were going to send somebody out to catch fish right now, what would be the most fun if somebody just wants to go out and bend the rod?
See if you can find that school of jacks and ladyfish and Spanish mackerel first thing in the morning.
Where would you guess they should look?
Well, they were sitting, I would say, about a mile above Cape Hayes Point. You won't miss it. Follow the birds. You're going to see 10 million birds out there. And if you want to just go bend a rod and have fun, well, there's three good fighting fish.
Now, remember, I recommend if you've got two people, only keep three Spanish mackerel, because they're not very good the day after or the day after that. If you got an early day, you know you're going to come in early enough to fillet the fish, put them on the grill. That Spanish mackerel is one of the best fish I've ever had. But I use that olive oil margarine butter stuff.
Yeah.
And then I take a little lemon herb seasoning, McCormick brand lemon herb, and I butter it up good, sprinkle the lemon herb on it, put that side down. When it turns brown, I butter again, a little more lemon herb, flip it over, and brown on both sides, done.
They're a phenomenal eating fish.
But only that day.
Only that day. They do not freeze well. They do not even refrigerate overnight well.
The next day, they're okay, but you have a very limited time frame to do the Spanish mackerel. And such a wonderful fish, but two people will...
Yeah,
because they're so good. Normally, I'd say one fish a piece, because by the time you do the potatoes and the coleslaw and all that, it's usually enough. But usually, they're so tasty, I figure one and a half per person.
I like to put them right on ice. I don't put them in the live well. I'm going to keep them, I put them right. And then all my other fish, I throw in the live well.
See, but the Spanish mackerel, if I'm eating them, usually, I want them all on ice.
They'll usually die in the live well.
Yeah, and I just want my fish on ice, because I'm real white bread. I mean, I was born in the Midwest. I did northern Wisconsin and all the rest of that stuff. I'm, you know, as Wonder Bread as you can pretty much get for the way I was raised and the way I eat, because that's what you learn to eat. So I want all my fish on ice. I don't have the resilient to keep up to any bacteria that would grow in 90-some degree weather or 90-some degree water.
Well, he's not going to grow bacteria if he's alive in your live well.
No, he won't, but...
I will put trout on ice, but just because they're so much easier to fillet when they're firmed up.
I think
like
all
that.
Fish are easier to fillet once they've been on ice. Now, with the exception of a snook or redfish, when it gets cold and he bends.
Yeah.
Once they bend, man, that's...
It's a pain in the butt. That's why I leave them alive in the live well. Snapper...
Good bless America, that's tough.
With my snapper, I'll usually drain my live well and put ice in the live well. Because the last thing in the world I want to fillet is a live snapper.
Oh,
yeah. I want them dead. But I do keep a bobber on the boat to stuff in his mouth in case he is a little bit alive and kicking. That way I'm not getting bit.
Yeah, because they tend to... You put your hand over there to hold the head while you go to fillet them, and they're just
and
about...
And they whack you.
Yeah, and then boom. And
if it bites me...
You almost have to break its jaw to get it off.
If it bites me, you're not getting that fish. Because it's not going to be filetable.
Ah, wee bit of a temper there. By the way, folks, I didn't introduce either one of us. And if you've been listening, you probably know my voice, Fish and Frank. But this is Captain Kale over here. I just kind of figured when you heard 20 Oopers in a Pontoon Boat and Captain Kale's voice, you'd kind of know who it was. I shouldn't do that. And Captain Kale's one helping me with fishingfranks.com, our new Fish and Franks boutique. And
yep.
Yes. The rest of the store is still kind of bait shop, but I think our website started out rather boutique-ish, you know.
I think that was kind of the whole point.
It was, because thank you guys for believing in the store and shopping here and becoming part of our friends and family and all that. And I met a guy, and he's in the middle part of the U.S. and at one of the shows, and he's designed some of the coolest stuff. All made, designed, the artwork, the labor, everything's here in the U.S. And we've got like keychains are like $9.95, but we've got some $6.95 ones coming on the way. They're either going to be $5.95 or $6.95. And they're really cool stuff. And there's snook and there's tarpon. And I mean, just
all made out of pewter.
And we've got
either normal bare metal pewter, and we do have painted versions also.
We're going to have several different materials. He's working it out for us, and we're redesigning a lot of his products with him. And it's just really beautiful stuff when you see it in person. The Christmas ornaments, we had to have Christmas ornaments because everywhere my wife goes, what she wants is a Christmas ornament. So these are all American-made products, and they're almost import prices. Almost.
So yeah,
we're getting there.
My mom always collected shot glasses.
Really?
Doesn't drink booze, but collects shot glasses from everywhere she's been.
I used to sell fishing tackle all over Europe, and I traveled most of Europe selling tackle and working with different programs and shows and stuff. And my one buddy, everybody collects spoons. You ever see that?
Yeah, my grandmother did.
Right. They all collect spoons. He collected forks. And I would go in the restaurant and say, you know, and I'd write the name of the restaurant with a marker on it. And he has a whole display of forks from all over everywhere.
And that's weird. You can't find forks like that. I mean, you can find spoons. You can find tourist trap spoons with the name of the place on the spoon.
So I would literally.
What did the fork do?
I would go to a restaurant in when I was in Slovenia and Slovakia and Hungary and all that. I would always stop at a restaurant and say, "Can I buy a fork?" They said, "What do you mean, buy a fork?" And I'd explain to them. And the hard part was I didn't speak all the languages, but I carried a book with me everywhere I went. And the first phrase I learned is, "Can I buy a fork?"
That's a new one.
And believe
that's
me,
pretty
you
close
don't
to the
that's, wrong.
Yeah, as I said, it's pretty close to what most people learn for their first trip to a country.
Yeah, you don't want to get it wrong, you know. So anyway, let's see.
Now I collected currency.
Oh yeah,
bills and coins from everywhere that I've been.
I have 100,000 Zimbabwe, whatever it is,
which is worth like 38 cents.
Oh, yeah. it's $100,000 bill.
Yeah, I've got a few of those.
It's nothing. So
Romania, I have one. It's 500,000.
Really?
Yeah, it's worth about 750.
Well, that's like when I bought a sandwich. I was in Italy quite a bit buying plastic boxes. They make some of the best fishing rods in the world there too, by the way. But they do a lot of tackle boxes, a lot of stuff. Italy's famous for their plastics. And we would go there and buy a sub sandwich, and it was 175,000 lira, which was like $8.
Now
it's all euros.
Italy, when I was there, it was still lira, and they do have some really, really cool coins. The one they have is about the size of our quarter. Imagine our quarter with a hole in the middle with a penny in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And that's what their 25 lira coins look like.
Right.
And the bad thing was it's the exact same size and shape and weight as a U.S. quarter. But it's worth about 3 cents.
Look at a Susan B. Whose bright idea, and the Indian one. Whose bright idea is to make dollars look like quarters?
Yeah.
Only the U.S. government could come up with that. So anyway, back onto the fishing. Right now, best lures of choice. A lot of bucktails going. We've actually ordered a huge different array of bucktails.
A lot of bucktails going. A lot of bombers going for the guys that are walking the piers for the snook. A lot of crazy jigs going for the guys that are beach fishing.
Storm swim baits.
The Storm Twitch Stick is still going like gangbusters.
But the soft plastic swim baits, the paddle tails.
Paddle tails are going good for both.
We've doubled our order last time. We doubled order this time. We're doubling our order the next time.
The tarpon fishermen and the shore fishermen at places like Elgin Bean Pier are buying those things up for snook and tarpon.
Anybody hear what actually happened to the guy who fell, got pulled in off of the pier? Was it a fish or what?
I don't know if it was a fish. I suspect it was probably that guy that comes in here all the time to get the stuff to hand line the Goliath grouper that's out there. He's been trying to catch it for the last couple months.
The only thing I'll say is when you're on most of these piers, first thing you got to do is look around on the piers, and not one of them has a ladder to get up.
No.
And none of the seawalls do. If you're on a private dock and if you're living on a canal here in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, give some thought to putting a ladder from your dock. Stand on your dock, look up and down the canal, and see if you see a ladder anywhere to get out of the water. There's nowhere to get out of the water if you fall in the canal. Now, I have a boat ramp, so I can just walk out.
Right.
But my neighbor fell off his dock, and I had to go rescue him and the kid
who
was in the water in the boat because there was no other way to get him back on the dock. And it's the one thing, not one pier, not one anything, has a ladder.
You will drive through PGI and see aluminum ladders on some of the docks. Okay, those are the guys that have already fallen in.
Right.
And learned their lesson.
Once they've fallen in the water, they learn the value of putting a ladder off the dock.
Exactly, because you're not getting back up it.
No, there's no way to get out of the water because everything's covered in barnacles and oysters. It's not like freshwater where everything's smooth and slimy.
And this, even if it was, it's 2 feet off the water. You're not getting up there.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. But, you know, I feel real bad for the kid, but I don't know how you could rescue yourself unless you were a really strong swimmer and were able to swim all the way to the end of the pier.
And you've got to be a very strong swimmer at Elgin Bean because that current is flying through there.
If the tide goes out, best thing to do is just stay with the current.
Yep.
Don't fight it till you get past the bridges and then swim off to the left or the right.
Yep,
if it's an incoming tide, let it work you through everything.
Yeah, go
get
through
to the
bridges,
other side, then go to left or the right.
Yeah,
and the current
and you're going to find that if you do that, the current's going to flush you toward shore anyways.
Right. It'll swirl around and get you towards
it. It's going to bring you right back to shore.
But it's tough, though. You got to relax. You can't panic. And you got to do a lot of floating because it's going to be a long time before you hit land.
Yep.
So if you can float, keep your head together and just float for a while. You're going to be fine.
Exactly.
So,
but, you know, if he did get pulled in by a fish, there's probably not a whole lot of calm left.
Well, you know, I don't know if, because some of these guys, they figure, well, I'll jump in the water and I can swim around and pull the fish back up to shore.
No, you can't.
Well, you and I know you can't, but when people are young, you know, they figure, well, the brain hasn't actually come together in the front part
right,
of their head.
Right.
And so they're invincible.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure, and if he got pulled off or decided the best thing that was not to lose his fish, I can jump in and swim that fish to shore. Because I've seen people try to do that stuff on the piers. You know, we see all kinds of stuff. And
no fish is worth that.
It's being pulled off. I don't understand how you're pulled off unless you were tied to the rod somehow.
Tied to the rod, or like I said, I got a really sneaky suspicion it's that guy that's hand-lining Goliath grouper out
there. He got tangled in his rope.
Probably.
And that would do it, because you got a 400 or 500-pound fish.
Yeah, you're not out swimming him.
No,
it's not
and it's sad, and I feel horrible for the family, and, you know, I feel bad talking about it. But on the other hand, trying to make people aware that when you're doing stuff, big fish, piers, no way to get out of the water, you got to make sure you're clear. Make sure that you're okay. And I feel really, really bad for the family. It's a horrible thing to have to go to. Because somewhere another, his mom and dad are sitting out there freaking out.
Yep.
You know, family and everybody's just, this is a horrible, horrible time for them. And, you know, I feel bad talking about it. But if we don't remind people how easy it is for things to go wrong.
More of them.
You know. Well, it's the first one in decades. But
yeah, it's the first one that I've ever heard of.
Yeah. No, years ago we had a couple people, but there again, they were, you know, there's no way to tell if it was, you know, what part in it happened there, and I haven't heard yet. But just make sure if you're hand lining big fish, your feet are not tangled in the rope.
Or your hands.
Or your hands or whatever. You know, it's the same reason we tell people when they're tarpon fishing, always flatten the barbs. If you've got a lure with treble hook, get rid of the barbs on the hooks.
Yep.
Because if you have a hook at the back of the lure and a treble hook at the front, and it, one of them gets in your hand and the other one's still tied to 150-pound fish,
you're going for a swim.
There's every chance in the world he's going to just drag you back in with them.
Yep.
And it's but if the barbs aren't in there, you guys release from each other,
right?
You know, you can get it out, it's no big deal. So anyway, so there's your little helpful tints and weirdness for the day,
your public service announcement.
Yes, this is your public service announcement from anyway, let's get back. Okay, we've decided if you want to go out and just have a lot of fun, get down towards Cape Hayes, kind of towards the middle of the harbor, go about a third of the way towards the middle, yep. Watch for a lot of birds.
Yeah, exactly.
And throw spoons, small jigs, really almost anything out there, because these fish actively, aggressively want to bite something.
Right, right. And I think we're going to see a pretty good tarpon feed probably near marker one if it's not happening today. It was glass minnows as far as you could see yesterday in front of Ponds Park. Just as far as you could see.
All right. Where's your best redfish bet?
The east side is starting to come alive. It is getting better. If you're looking for slot-sized redfish, you're still going to do a little hunting. It's going to be one here, two here. It's not going to be sitting in one spot pulling out a dozen of them. If you're looking for the big oversized redfish, I think my best bet is going to be probably Jug Creek Shoal. Not because you got a better chance of catching redfish there, big oversized redfish, but you have another, you know, enough other fish to keep yourself occupied waiting for those big redfish to come by. You can sit there and fish the flats for trout and snapper while you're waiting for those redfish to show up.
Yeah, that all sounds pretty good. So, anything else you want to...
No, not that I can think of.
Well, this is Fish and Frank in the chair here. There's 20 youpers in the pontoon boat. Now, there's a link to the Die Youpers website. And go on there and check out their cool stuff. The Die Youpers are very cool people. Okay, guys, and this is Fish and Frank here, and Captain Kale in the chair across from me. And if you click on his picture, it'll take you right to his website, and you can find out more about Captain Kale. And we'll catch you on the next Radio Fishing. Thanks for listening.